As you know in your practice, ED is increasing in young men, and estrogen supplementation is increasing in young men. There's another culprit besides the phallocystic. It's the BPA, or the substitutes now, BPS and BPF.
This is the Man Up Podcast, the doctor's guide to men's health. Each week on our podcast, we interview the top specialists of the field on various topics in men's health. If you have questions that you are too afraid to ask, we have the answers. This week, our episode is titled Future Fertility Fears, Part 2, Endocrine Disruptors and Their Effect on Male Fertility. I'm Dr. Kevin Chu, and I'm joined as always by my co-host, Dr. Justin Dubin. Justin, you are coming to us from Texas, is that correct?
I'm a cowboy, baby.
Cowboy.
Not a football fan cowboy, but yeehaw, I'm a Texas guy now. I'm here for the AUA, which is the American Urology Association Conference. I'm going to be giving a talk and have an interview or two. One of my favorite conferences of the year. Unfortunately, Kevin couldn't make it this year. He's got a bigger trip coming up in the next few weeks. But we're going to have a good time. See a lot of urologists, a lot of people that were on the podcast, maybe get some new people to come on, and recruiting is kind of part of the goal here too.
Absolutely. AUA is always a great time. I love seeing old colleagues, it's just a great time chatting about urology, men's health, and also just hanging out, which, you know, we do so much in our field. A lot of times it's a lot of work, but this is a good time to kind of, you know, step outside and hang out. So I'm really sad to be missing it this year, but, you know, hopefully next year I'll be back out there.
Yeah, hopefully. And we'll probably see each other though in Scottsdale. So that'll be good.
Oh yeah.
For us today. So this is part two of last week's episode, with Dr. Swan. And honestly, this is probably the more compelling part in my opinion. You know, we're talking about EDCs, endocrine disrupting chemicals, and it's become a really hot topic in probably the last 5 years. And once again, to promote Dr. Swan's book, The Countdown, she talks a lot about it. It's an excellent book. Highly recommend giving it a read. The Countdown, you can buy it off of Amazon. But, you know, as we find out, and I didn't really have an idea how overall encompassing these chemicals are in our daily lives. It's very, very scary.
That's right. That's right. You know, I will tell you, look, I'm going to give you an example of something that I've just changed in the last month, actually. And a lot of it stemmed from this conversation. So I use something called an AeroPress. Have you ever heard of this, Justin? An AeroPress?
No.
So
no.
An AeroPress is something where you put coffee grounds in this like plastic thing. You use a suction device that basically causes it to immerse. It's like an immersion technique, makes the coffee grounds really come out, and then you press it through. It's like a pseudo French press. Coffee that way, it's fabulous, man. It's delicious. You look online, this is like the only way some people say that you should make coffee, and it's excellent. But guess what? You're actually using a plastic device. You're pouring like this hot boiling water on it every day. Like I was having it every day, making my daily coffee this way. And after this conversation with Dr. Swan, and also with my own kind of research on just understanding, you know, endocrine disrupting chemicals and their effect on health, I was like, I got to stop this. So I actually switched to something ceramic now. And it's widely talked about online. And that's just one of the things that I've started doing. Now, do we have like compelling evidence? Yes. Is it 100%? No, there's actually other evidence out there to suggest like, actually, you're not like getting that much of that in your body, blah, blah, blah. But that's where this healthy discussion is, I think, that we need to have and just be more aware of, and, you know, knowing that there's things that we may be putting in our body that could be affecting it.
100%. And actually, after this conversation, I also changed a couple things I did. For example, I went out, I bought ceramic and glass, like everything to heat up. Like all the food containers I have in my house now are ceramic or glass. I'm not heating any plastic up in the microwave.
Yep.
And, you know, I think in general, these are important, but she does. And I think this is an important conversation when it comes bringing it back to the fertility and children is, you know, the exposure intrauterine, right?
Yeah.
You know, for a developing child is where we talk about real concerns that she brings up. Now, listen, you know, once again, we're not trying to scare people. We're not trying to like fear monger, but we're just trying to provide people with evidence to understand the potential risks. Like you said, like there's some data that's less compelling out there, but there is a lot of compelling data. And I mean, I have truthfully, as you have kind of changed a couple of the things that we've done and been aware of. So I think this is a really important, really, really interesting conversation for people who are interested in fertility, interested in optimizing their testosterone levels, and interested in like reducing risk to like an unborn child, and just, you know, overall improvement of your quality of life. So I think that's really all I got to say, because I got to get to this conference, but you got to do some other stuff in clinic.
Yeah.
But any other comments, Kev?
No, and I think this is going to be a topic that, Justin, you and I are going to come back to probably pretty often as the years go on, as we keep getting more information from this. So this is a fascinating conversation. I want you guys to enjoy it, but just know we're going to probably be talking about this in the years coming.
Well said. All right, guys, thanks for listening. As always, check out the website and check out our YouTube. Please download, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Really important. We're trying to push those numbers. Download, subscribe on Spotify, iTunes, you know, all of the podcasting platforms. As always, thanks for listening. Until next time, enjoy the episode, guys. Guys, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably interested in learning about your health. When it comes to understanding your fertility, there's no better test than the semen analysis.
For a long time, however, the process of getting a semen analysis was difficult. There were not many places to get it done, and when you were able to, you'd have to go to an office, uncomfortably provide a sample in a cold, sterile facility. Nothing easy or fun about that.
Fortunately, there is a new and better way to provide a semen analysis, and that's with Fellow. Through Fellow, you get an at-home semen analysis kit that sends you reliable results in less than 2 business days after providing a sample in the comfort of your home. And guess what? If you had a vasectomy and need to confirm that you are sperm-free, you can do that with Fellow from the comfort of your home, too.
That's right. No more awkward trips to the office. No more worries about finding a doctor who provides these services. Simply go to meetfellow.com. That is meetfellow.com. And order your semen analysis or post-vasectomy semen analysis kit, and they will ship it directly to your home.
Listen, we both love using Fellow for our patients, but the best part is you don't even need a script. Just go to meetfellow.com and purchase it online yourself. So if you or your partner are interested in learning more about your fertility status, check out Fellow at meetfellow.com and purchase a kit today. So what are the main, I mean, we'll get into the other EDCs, but what are the main, like, obviously you're talking about bendable plastics. What other, well, I guess I can just expand this. Like we're talking about endocrine disrupting chemicals, right? Endocrine disrupting chemicals is the EDCs are the big term here. We discussed phthalates to some degree. Obviously you can really compromise, the exposure can compromise your fertility, your testosterone, your estrogen levels, all of these things. In addition to the phthalates, what are some of the other EDCs that are prominently out there, and where are they, and you know, where are we getting our exposure to these from?
Yeah. So I would say the first thing that comes to mind is plastic. So plastic has a huge number of chemicals in it, and depending on the particular kind of plastic, whether it's hard, whether it's soft, color, whatever its material properties are, they'll have different chemicals. So the phthalates are plasticizers that put in to make it soft. BPA is put in to make it hard. Mm-hmm. So like a hard water bottle. And by the way, I should just point out that the BPA is related to, in one study, I wish there were more, but there's only one that I know of, to erectile dysfunction. Mm. So, and that's not during pregnancy. This is a worker study of men in China who were manufacturing BPA, and they had significantly more erectile dysfunction. And it's a candidate that I think we should be looking at, because as you know, in your practice, ED is increasing in young men.
Oh, and
testosterone supplementation is increasing in young men. And you know, there's another culprit besides the phthalates. It's the BPA or the substitutes now, BPS and BPF, which they put in to try to, actually think, trick people, because they say BPA free, but in fact it has these alternatives which do the same thing, BPS and BPF, and now there are more coming. So those are two things. Other endocrine disruptors, probably you have heard, and many people have heard about the what's called the forever chemicals. And those are the PFOS and PFOS, PFOS. And these are chemicals that I like to call barrier chemicals. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they provide a barrier, for example, on your waterproof jacket, keeping the rain from going through to you. They're on a frying pan,
yep,
nonstick.
The Teflon. Frying pan. Yeah.
So they, you know, okay. And then there's pizza boxes.
Yeah. They got the pizza.
You know, to keep the grease from going through the box. And cash register receipts have them. Tooth fillings have them. They're just everywhere. And then going to the other major classes, there's pesticides. Pesticides have been disrupting our environment for as long as we've been doing this, back to Rachel Carson and the DDT and so on. And so these have many, many implications. They can be they're endocrine disruptors, and their effects are many because there's so many pesticides. I would say they're just all purpose endocrine disruptors, right?
Well, you also did a study, right, looking at the employees of those facilities and pesticide facilities and exposure to all these things in factories, and they all had significantly lower fertility rates, correct?
Actually, I didn't do that study. I did a study of men. So one of the studies I did was in four cities in the United States, and we collected men's semen samples, and we also collected their urine, and we found that men who were living in Minnesota, which is not agricultural, obviously, and men compared to men in Columbia, Missouri, which is agricultural, had twice as many moving sperm. Minnesota had twice as many moving sperm.
Wow.
Oh, that's huge. Twice as many moving sperm. And then we went into the samples, and we found that in Columbia, Missouri, men who had low fertility, low concentration, low morphology, low motility, had significantly more pesticides. It was a small sample. We didn't have a lot of money, but it was very significant. So yes, we showed that pesticides are related directly to sperm count. And many people have showed this in many, many studies since then. So pesticides, you know, when people ask me, what can I do? First thing I say is eat organic. You know, that's sort of a relatively simple, if you can afford it and if you can find it, thing to do. I also tell them eat unprocessed foods as much as you can, because the processing, as we discussed, you know, when food goes through tubes, it takes the phthalates and, you know, increases the phthalate levels. So I didn't mention one more class, and that is the flame retardants. Mm-hmm. And these are, they have problems of their own, as well as a problem with PFAS and PFOS. So I think, you know, we're just surrounded with these endocrine disrupting chemicals.
I'm honestly having like an existential crisis right now. It's been a minute since I read your book, and now I'm being reminded, and I'm like, I'm looking around my apartment right now. I'm like, oh God.
Well, here, let me share a personal story, actually. Yeah. How I really went into a deep dive on this, and just am just in so much wonder how we haven't, like, you know, how you've done a lot of work on it, but like other people would just like aren't kind of like looking at this. So, you know, I have a 2-year-old son, and he loves to run out on the patio. So one day I decided to get some synthetic grass. I went to Home Depot, bought synthetic grass, like that fake artificial turf, rolled it out. And then I was all of a sudden like, oh, I'm more worried that I'm going to get the stained underneath on the patio. So let me go online and just type in artificial turf stain. didn't get anything on the staining, but just came up with all the stuff on PFAS and the links to like all the cancer. And I was just blown away. Like PFAS, yeah. testicular cancer, its relation. It is, you know, I've become more passionate about it, Justin, though. It's just like the lifestyle yeah. and being more aware of your environment. These are things that we should pay more attention to, at least in my opinion.
Yeah. So, Kevin, did you get rid of the turf?
Yeah. Begrudgingly, my son was very unhappy, but I was like, you know, at least I was seeing some of that. You know, I've seen some cities even start banning artificial turf in the uses of their public space. And so as someone who practices and sees a lot of patients for infertility, I actually moved it out. I took it out. So
that's great. Now, the one other thing that I know we didn't mention is like scented products, certain, you know, shampoos.
Yeah.
What endocrine disrupting chemicals are involved, and how can we protect ourselves from those kinds of substances?
Yeah. Yeah. So I told you that phthalates were added to plastic to make it soft, but they have two remarkable properties. They increase absorption of a chemical, and they also hold scent and color. They increase the, you know, how long you could. Okay. So they're added actually to pesticides because they increase the absorption of the pesticide into the plant, which is interesting. They used to be listed by EPA as, what do they call that? Well, anyway, non-active ingredients, but they're not active as pesticides, but they're active in this other way. They're added, you know, in lipstick, they're in there to keep the color. In nail polish, they're in there to keep the color. And then everything, and you know, everything you put on your face, any color, you know, and artificial tan, so, and also scent. So anything that has an odor, we asked our women in our study, what did you use in the last 24 hours before you gave your urine sample? And they listed every product they used, you know, every beauty care product, every personal care product. And then we asked them, did it have a scent? Was it scented or unscented? And the phthalate levels of these women increased with the number of scented products. So it can be cosmetics, it can be air fresheners, it can plug-ins in the wall. Air fresheners are terrible. Air fresheners in your car, those little pine cone things you hang in your car, those are terrible. Anything that holds scent is going to...
You just need to smell bad, pretty much. If you smell bad, you're good.
Right. But there are also parabens. There are also phenols, bisphenols, various kinds that are in these products. So, and by the way, the products that are used by African Americans and are actually worse. They're seriously worse, and they have formaldehyde, and you know, so. Personal care products, they sound nice. They're appealing and people want to buy them, but they're really kind of bad. We have to be really careful. And let me just say, not about reproduction, but there was a very brilliant study that was published recently that looked at personal care products and did a little intervention and changed the personal care products that women were using. Said, use this instead of this. And what they showed was that in the women that changed to the safer products, they had fewer markers of, they identified early markers of breast cancer, genetic markers of breast cancer. Mm. And those that had changed their product use had fewer bad markers, you know, indicating that they would go on to get breast cancer. So that's a really brilliant study that should be repeated, but I think we're going to see more and more of that, you know, where we can tease out, you know, what these products do on a basic molecular level and try to intervene early enough to make a change. Yeah.
Very interesting. Now, I have something that's on my head right now. It was something you mentioned earlier, and I want to go back. because I'm I kind of want to ask you your opinion or what you think. So you mentioned in utero phthalates important in the terms of exposure for the pregnant woman. And then we kind of left off. And then you mentioned, though, that 70, 80 day, which we counsel a lot of our patients on, you know, during time of you're actively trying to reproduce.
Yes.
And you said also you said mentioned about phthalate exposure then. So is this like a reversible thing or no for men, you know, let's say in your 30s during their like reproductive age, or do we not know?
Oh, wow.
It's a great question.
It's a great question. And I have to say, I don't know. I would suspect that the sperm that are produced in that window, which are going to conceive this pregnancy, obviously you care about that. After that, new sperm are being made, and it may well be that the exposures that you got 2 months ago or 5 months ago are right. No longer going to be. So because phthalates leave the body very quickly, they leave it in 4 or 6 hours half-life. So that's a great thing. You know, there's a big turnover. So if we can get them out and not keep adding them back in, then we can, you know, make some progress. That's not true of all of these chemicals though. Yeah.
And have there been any, studies looking at the impact on puberty and endocrine disrupting chemicals?
There have been some, and I can't
specifically for men, obviously for question.
So there have been some studies on age of puberty, age at various markers of puberty, and I can't speak to that. You're going to have to get another expert on that.
No worries. No worries. We appreciate the honesty, and that's the most important thing, obviously. Yeah. We want good data, and if you don't know, that's totally fine. Now, obviously, all this is, like I said in the beginning, overwhelming. We've gone through so many endocrine disrupting chemicals. We've gone through so many different ways in which we can get exposed to them. Can you give us a quick little summary breaking down, like what's the best way to pretty much reduce? I don't know if anyone can truly, you know, negate all of it.
Yeah.
At least best way to reduce our exposure to all these endocrine disrupting chemicals on a daily basis.
So I would say food. So how do these get in our body? Every way, right? So ingestion. Dermal, I told you about the absorption,
right?
And inhalation, okay? So, for example, think hairspray.
Aerosolized, scented stuff.
Yeah, hairspray, nail polish, and so on. So any which way. But it turns out that the probably the biggest source of exposure is our food, okay? So if you can clean up your food act, if you will, here are some things. I would say don't try to minimize your use of fast food. So obviously the cheaper the food, the more plastic is going to be used in the process. I think that's a general sort of truism, if you will. I would say minimize as much as you can processed food. That would be food in jars, food in cans. So the ideal thing would be to go, if you could find it, if it's near you, not everyone has this near them, but if you can find a farmer's market that has organic food, you buy that there, you bring it home, you cook it, you eat it in pans that are not Teflon lined. and that's it. And then you have not added to your body burden in that meal, right? Okay, so as much as you can do that, keep that as a goal. Not everyone has, you know, everyone's busy and they have to get these quick things and fast foods and so on. So I know how difficult it is, but you might think of that as an ideal, you know. And then you go to how do you store them? What kind of containers do you put them in before you put them in the fridge? Well, glass is great. Ceramic is great. Just try to avoid plastic. And of course, you don't ever, ever, ever microwave in plastic. So you don't want to heat anything that puts food in contact with plastic and something warm, you're going to make trouble for yourself. So I would say that's a really relatively easy thing to do. And then I just should point out that these things are also in our clothing. They're also in our wall coverings and our floor coverings and our house, you know, so it's not just
our artificial turf.
It's hard. I mean, in our book Countdown, we have two chapters on what you can do to reduce your exposure. There are also websites you can go to, where you can check out individual products. Environmental Working Group is one of them. And you can, there's an app you can get called Clearia. So you can take it along when you go shopping and you can look up a product name.
Oh, that's great.
That's cool.
Yeah. So there, you can get some help that way. And what these companies do is they have curated, you know, the lists of bad actors put out by Prop 65 and the World Health Organization and all these governmental agencies and say, these are the bad guys, right? And then these companies run the list of ingredients in these products against the bad guys and make sure that if they give a high rating to a chemical, I mean, sorry, to a product, then it doesn't have a lot of these bad chemicals in it. So they don't actually test the product. Unfortunately, that's so difficult and expensive, but they do say that it's by the ingredient list. So if the ingredient doesn't have to be listed and not everything has to be listed, then they might miss it. But generally that's a good place to start.
I think that's great. You know, key, because it can be so overwhelming. There's a lot of different things going on for sure.
Yeah.
Justin, I don't know do you still do a lot of delivery from time to time? My wife, you don't?
No, I don't.
Oh, my wife, she always, every time we order like delivery, she looks at that hot food in the plastic bin sometimes they, and she's like, yo, that's probably not good. I'm like, yeah, I don't think so either, but I'm going to eat it right now.
I don't know. You say hold the plastic cutlery and hold the, but you can't tell them what containers to put.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about mostly about male fertility so far, you know, on this. Now, is there data supporting declines in female fertility as well?
Much less, because, you know, you can count sperm, but it's much, much harder to count eggs.
Yes.
Yeah. So unfortunately, because the apparatus is hidden in the female, you know, the men, it all hangs out there, right? You can look at it, you can examine it. But for a female, it's much, much more difficult. So we have much less information. But there are endpoints we can look at, like miscarriage rate. I mentioned that miscarriage rate has gone up at about the same rate, 1% per year, that sperm count has declined. So, of course, miscarriage is not just on the female side. It could be a reflection of problems on the male side. So that's a little tricky, not just female. So yeah, I feel bad that there's not, you know, there's so relatively few studies in females, but
it's just hard. It's just harder to do.
Now
I have a question going back to your 2023 study. When you said that around 2000, that sperm decline happened two times as much, 2%. Was there anything that you theorized that happened in 2000 specifically that started causing this decline even more? Is it increased exposures, you think? Is it something else going on? Because double is quite significant, especially in such a large breadth of people.
But it wasn't, if you look at the curve, it's not like it suddenly dropped. It wasn't a sudden change in slope. It was just like, if you look at the decline, you know, in the earlier part of the follow-up period versus 2000, you know, just separate those, then it's greater, as you would expect, if the line is declining. So it's not that was just to answer the question of what's happened recently, but it's not to say that we are seeing suddenly an uptick. I think we're seeing if we plot the whole time from 1973 to 2018, we'll see something around a little over 1% per year. But if you limit it to 2000 to 2018, then you see, yes, recently it's even
gotcha.
More. Yeah.
That's gotcha. Yeah. Now, the next question, I'm gonna preface it because one of the things I think that's so interesting about your study is because I think a lot of people have translated your study and taken advantage of your study. And what I'm talking about is Kevin and I obviously are in the men's health range and everything on social media, and you've been obviously exposed to it at this point, having done the study yourself. And, you know, and I can't imagine the amount of people who reach out to you on a daily basis saying like, men are not men anymore. You know, there's guys out there, men's health coaches giving false information, ways to improve your testosterone, ways to improve your sperm count. And, you know, for better or worse, it's nothing that you did. I think that some, to some degree, when you see a study like this, people have that human reaction to say, you know, to be, to put it quite bluntly, some people go, we're fucked. And now we have to figure out a way to do better. And people are trying to take advantage of people who are worried. We are not those people. You are not one of those people because you're interested in getting good, clean data. But my question to you is, what do you say to people who are truly like, you know, one, trying to take advantage or you know, they don't really know the data. They just know that the big picture aspect of it. And then two, like, you know, should people be seeking that kind of advice? Should they be, you know, freaking out like that?
Yeah. Well, obviously I think very badly of people who exploit other people's misfortune, if you will.
Right.
You know, and of course we see that all over the place. So I would just say that before anybody, and this is probably men, given what we've been talking about, adopts any treatment or medication, or that they really check out the credentials of the physician that they're going to, the company they're going to, and just be aware that there is a lot of fraud out there. And there is a lot of exploitation of the concerns, the fears of men about their fertility, their testosterone, their sperm count. And but there are, the medical profession, by and large, is honest and ethical. And you can certainly find a highly respected physician like you guys to go to. And I sincerely recommend that men do that because it's too important to get it wrong.
Yeah. I mean, Kevin, tell me, you this is our experience all day, every day, right?
Yeah. And, you know, Dr. Swan, you kind of, you know, stated some of the biggest fears that we see is that these patients come in, you know, when you tell a guy, hey, look, your penis, you're going to have erectile dysfunction, or your testosterone, or your sperm count. Those are the three things, you know, it's not the heart, it's not the head so much, you know, it's none of those things. Yeah. Those are the main three things. You get that, you're going to catch their attention. And we see patients a lot. They've seen the TikToks, the IGs that are said like, this is what you need to do at ASAP, you know, and that's why we wanted to have you on. We wanted you to kind of explain to everyone, this is the data, this is the studies you've done, and this is what we know. And, you know, that's very important, right, Justin?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the point is, you know, I just can't stand when I see people who are vulnerable. We've already, you know, mentioned that there's a lot of vulnerable people out there. People don't have the education on this stuff. They don't have the ability to make some of these changes, but at least understanding what they can and can't do is important. But Kevin and I, probably more than most, and a lot of other men's health doctors who do what we do, see that, you know, people are going to non-medical healthcare professionals, getting non-medical advice, paying exorbitant amounts of money to do so because they think that they're going to be able to improve their fertility and they're able going to be able to improve their testosterone through some non-data-driven, non-scientific, you know, often not real lifestyle measure, right? A lot of the things that we, pretty much everything that we talked about with you today is a lifestyle intervention. And I think that's such an important thing to highlight today, because we're not, you're not pitching any product. You're not talking about anything. No. We're talking about exposures. We're talking about lifestyle. We're talking about what you're eating. And there is no one in the world, except for maybe your doctors, your, you know, maybe your personal trainer and a good dietitian who's probably going to be able to do anything else for you other than that. So I just really wanted to highlight that, because I think that that's something that I want to get across to our listeners, that it's so important that they understand that, you know, this is a problem, but the solution really starts with you and how you treat the situation and you treat your knowledge of it.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I wanted to say, it's unfortunate that there aren't regulatory agencies taking care of this for us so that we're not exposed to these things. But the products, you know, the Food and Drug Administration does pretty well at protecting us again, you know, and not exposing us, as has in the past. There were drugs out there that weren't effective and that were harmful. That was certainly historically the case. But then FDA has improved greatly, and I trust their recommendations. But there's no comparable agency for the products that we buy in the grocery store or in the hardware store, you know, 7-Eleven or whatever it is. There isn't anything looking over those and saying, okay, this is safe. There isn't anything, and there should be. It should not be up to us, but it is. That's,
I think it's fair. It's a fair point.
So this has been great. I think we pretty much covered it. Yeah. And I thank you for letting me speak to you and speak to your listeners. And we're all on the same
page. Of course. Well, listen, I just want to give you one more shout out. Tell our listeners where they can find you. Tell us, you know, where they can find your book, because I think this has been an incredibly informative session with you, and I really learned a lot, and it's been really eye-opening for us as well.
Great. Well, thank you, Justin. Countdown is my book. If you look it up, you have to remember it's two words. Count with a C and down with a capital D, because there's other books that are a single word. So that's not me. You can send an email to me at info@shaunaswan.com, and probably I'll answer you.
That's awesome. Honestly, this was really fantastic. You know, maybe we'll have you on again, because I think we could always continue talking about this, but we really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with us today. Kevin, any final comments?
No, Dr. Swan, thank you so much for coming on. This is a very, very interesting topic that Justin and I always sit and just talk and just debate about. And it's very interesting. So thank you. Thank you for your time.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. As always, any questions, comments, concerns, please feel free to email us at themanuppod@gmail.com. Check out our Instagram @themanuppod, TikTok, Twitter, all of that @themanuppod, YouTube. Download, subscribe. You can listen to this episode and all our other episodes on Spotify, iTunes, and Amazon as well. Thanks for listening, guys. Until next time.